Speaking to you from Bay St. Louis, Mississippi, with the second part of the discussion on Zionism and the plot to destroy Christianity, titled The Truth About the Jews. Many Christians today, especially those in the fundamentalist camp, are among the first who want to do away with the law of the Old Testament. If they were honest in their appraisal of their own thinking, they would have to admit that they are as much Judaized as they are Christianized. It is such persons who are put to confusion when they call themselves heirs of the promises made to the Jews, since none of the Bible promises were ever made to anybody called Jews, and the promises which were made to Israel have the most part been rejected by the modern Jews. Our fundamentalist pastors, who insist on backing the Antichrist government of Israel, for instance, would do well to read 2 Chronicles 19:2 and see how God's wrath fell on a king who supported an evil Israelite king. Here's what it says. Shouldest thou help the ungodly and love them that hate the Lord? Therefore is wrath upon thee from before the Lord. And if God was angry with the aid given to an ungodly king in 896 B.C., what makes you preachers believe that he would condone the same thing today? What some of these men are saying by their actions is that they are willing to make terms with wicked men in order to win the favors of the Jewish God, who is not the same God, by the way, as the Christian God that we serve. When the president of the Southern Baptist Convention stated that God does not hear the prayers of the Jews, he was jumped on by liberal and fundamental Christians alike and accused of being an anti-Semite. But Dr. Bailey Smith was right, for Jesus himself clearly stated in John 14 and 6, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man, and that means Muslim, Hindu, Gentile, or Jew, no man cometh unto the Father but by me. Now, how in the world can you be any plainer than that? And the Yahweh of the Jews is an alien deity, alien to the Christ of the New Testament, and to put Christ to shame by yielding to the falsehood that his gospel is Jewish in origin comes close to the truth that they have no right to call themselves Christians. And if they would study Galatians carefully, they would see what Paul had to say to the Judaized Christians of his day. Taking the Jewish religion to this modern day, we find there are no labor union laws for Gentiles under Jewish religion rule. A Gentile observing the Sabbath deserves death, says the Talmud. Do you wonder how the rabbis ring the Bible in on this one? Well, they take Genesis 8:22 and quote this phrase, For it is written, a day and a night they shall not rest. But here's what the verse says in its entirety. While the earth remaineth, seed time and harvest, and cold and heat, and summer and winter, and day and night shall not rest, shall not cease. This verse has no bearing whatsoever on what the Talmudic law says it has. The fourth of the Mosaic commandments, which is found in Exodus 20 and 10, said, Thou shalt not do any work, thou, nor thy son, nor thy daughter, nor thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor thy strangers that is within the gates. To the rabbis, the stranger is presumed to be another human being. In other words, he's a visiting Jew. The Gentile is not. The cattle of the Jew gets to rest according to the rabbis, but the Gentiles are not allowed to rest. Have you ever wondered why most of the sweatshops of the 19th and early 20th century, where little boys and girls under the age of the teens would often work 12 to 14 hours a day for a few pennies, often working in dangerous and extremely uncomfortable conditions? Why were these sweatshops almost 100% Jewish owned? Friedrich Engels, the wealthy English Jew who kept Karl Marx in business, was the owner of several of these sweatshops. What a hypocrisy is to say that he wanted to liberate the working men. And yet this is typical of Talmudic hypocrisy. And here's the answer. The Jews consider you and I as lower than the animals. And that's what they're taught. Now, doesn't it seem strange to you that the people who scream the loudest about racial oppression are often in the forefront of this oppression? Look at the garment factories of America, especially those in the Los Angeles area. where illegal immigrants are still working in sweatshop conditions, and see who the proprietors are. Look at the Jewish names in communism who have propagated the greatest slave labor system in the history of the world. Look at the repression of the Israeli towards their Arab neighbors, especially if they happen to be Christians. And yet your pastor stands in the pulpit and tells you, we must help them for they are God's chosen people. A Jew may make a false statement to a Gentile without breaking Moses' commandment against false swearing. In the text of the Kol Nidre, and also found in the Jewish Encyclopedia, on the Day of Atonement, the cantor, that's the synagogue official who leads the congregation, intones three times all vows, obligations, oath, whether called konam, konas, or any other name, which we may vow or swear or pledge, or whereby we may be bound from this Day of Atonement to the next, we will repent. May they be deemed absolved, forgiven, annulled, and void, and made of none effect. The vows shall not be reckoned vows, and the obligations shall not be obligations, nor the oaths be oaths, unquote. What does that mean? It means that the promise of a Jew, when it's given to a Gentile, has no meaning whatsoever. The reply of the congregation to this typical blasphemous use of Scripture is three times they moan the verse from Numbers 15 and 26, and it shall be given, forgiven all the congregation of Israel and the stranger that sojourneth among them, seeing all the people were in ignorance, unquote. Here's a typical Jewish reaction. Knowing in advance, they cast away every shred of honor recognized by civilized people, and to justify their crimes, they use the Scripture, which provides forgiveness by erring through ignorance. What should this mean to you as a Christian? It ought to mean that you should realize that you cannot trust a Jew. This country cannot trust Jewish advisors of our president. They cannot trust the government of Israel. They cannot trust Jewish lawyers. They cannot trust Jewish judges, for they are taught to lie if it's to their benefit. And here is the background for the communist idea. The end justifies the means. It is a Talmudic teaching. Now again, for those of you who may not have heard the first message of this series, I must reiterate, I am not preaching hatred of the Jewish people. All I am doing is showing you the truth about them taken from their own writings, and am speaking principally about the Zionist Khazar Jew, who is not even a Jew, although he calls himself one. If you are honestly concerned Christian America, you ought to be able to see how the Jews have seduced the United States into a condition of near slavery to their anti-God ideals. Now let's go back to some history. Hadrian was emperor of Rome from 117 AD to 138 AD. In 132, the Jews began a revolt, and for 4 years they carried on a bloody war. The reason for this revolt, headed by the Pharisees, has been told by M. Levi Frumpkin, a Jew, in his History of the Talmud, which was printed in 19.3. Here's what he said. One of the causes of the great revolt against Romans at this time was the prohibition by the Roman government of the study of the Torah. The people rebelled, led by Bar Kochba. Rabbi Akiba was the first to become his adherent. He journeyed from town to town, inciting the Jews to rebel. It is not surprising, then, that Hadrian was not merely content with killing the sages of the Talmud, but was intent on the destruction of the Talmud itself. He decreed that if an old rabbi were to qualify a young rabbi, both of them must be put to death. He believed that with the death of the elder generation, the Talmud would be forgotten and the Jews would blend in with other nations and be forgotten as a race, unquote. Now, some of you have probably heard the word Hasidim used in connection with Judaism. The Jewish Encyclopedia of 1943 uses both the letter C and the letter H when spelling this word. It has been called a religious movement within Talmudism, which has won the allegiance of about half of the people who are called Jews. Its leading Billy Graham was Israel Baal Shem Tov, shortened to Besht, B-E-S-H-T. Father-to-son dynasties were set up by the Hasidic leaders and fortune-tellers, wonder-workers, invokers of spirits, healers. Singing and dancing were used to produce the entities similar to which is found among many of the charismatic groups. Evil was deliberately indulged in to purify it. The Jewish Encyclopedia of 1905 says it was founded for two reasons. First, religious pantheism, which is a doctrine that equates God with nature and is the major doctrine of Freemasonry, and second, the idea of communion between God and man as adopted from the Kabbalah. Remember now, this is the occult branch of Judaism. This idea is that not only does God affect men, but that God exerts influences, that men exert influences on God, both as to his will and to his mood. Pantheism, or nature worship, is the oldest pagan concept of God. The sum total of nature being God is that man can be the chief engineer of his destiny if he knows the ropes. This was the essence of the poem, which says, "I am the master of my fate, I am the captain of my soul." It reiterates the idea of the German philosopher, the Jew Ludwig Feuerbach, who over 100 years ago taught, quote, "Man will finally be truly free when he realizes there is no God of man, but man himself." And this Khazar Jew was merely repeating a Talmudic concept. It is the fulfillment of Satan's promise to Eve in Genesis 3 and 5 when he told her, "For God doth know in the days that you eat of it," the forbidden fruit, "that your eyes shall be opened and ye shall become gods, knowing good from evil." In Hasidism, the name of God is used to conjure up spirits in direct contradiction with everything that's taught in the Mosaic law. The Luciferian concept of the Kabbalah is that man can become God if he knows how. In 1712 B.C., Isaiah foretold the fall of the Babylonian world power, still in the future, as Christ did at the end of the first century in the book of Revelation. Isaiah blamed the wicked woman, directress, for the fall of this great city because of the multitude of her sorceries. Read about it in Isaiah 47:9 and in Revelations 18 and 7. The black arts used by the Hasidim in their religious observances is condemned throughout the Bible. Remember now that about half of the present-day Jews belong to this Kabbalistic group. The Baal Shem, or master of the name, is called a saint, or Kaddish, who, according to the Jewish Encyclopedia, quote, "rules by the possession of the largest number of sparks of divine emanation." He stands on the same level as Moses and the prophet, and not only speaks with authority on the Torah, but can change and abrogate it if he so desires. The Hasidim must live in submission to the Zadish and surround him with their love, bring him gifts, cater to his every whim, and never question his conduct even when it departs from the accepted norm. Unquote. Gershom Scholem, head of the Department of Jewish Mysticism at the Jewish University in Palestine, in a group of lectures delivered in New York City in 1946, extols the Baal Shem Tov and called him a saint. He closed his book with a prophecy that Jewish mysticism still has its greatest role to play in world history. And here at least he coincides with the Bible, and as you read it in 2 Thessalonians 2:9. This speaks about a coming Jew whose coming is after the working of Satan with all power and signs and lying wonders, unquote. The new words we use today, such as emanation and dialectal materialism, merely dresses up an old pagan Jewish practice learned in ancient Babylon and brought to Jerusalem when the Jews returned from captivity under Ezra. Moses Hess, like Karl Marx, the father of modern socialism, was born in Germany in 1812 of Talmudic rabbinical ancestry. He was active with both Marx and Friedrich Engels in the promoting of communism, which he held could be best achieved through Hasidism or Zionism, as is now known. And he is still the patron saint of the present-day Zionists. His chief literary effort was a book called Rome and Jerusalem, printed in 1848. He was in Paris at this time and rushed home to take part in the armed resistance movement. His activity as a communist organizer earned him the title of the communist Rabbi Moses. He believed that prayers, rituals, and show in the synagogue was for the little Jew, but on the higher echelons, the atheistic Einsteins and the Jewish theological seminarians see eye to eye. It becomes quite clear to any honest reader of the Jewish Encyclopedia that all personality, intelligence, planning, and biblical powers were taken away from God by these pagan Pharisees. This was called ridding the Bible of anthropomorphism. In theological terminology, that means attributing of the human characteristics to God. Hess advocated the colonization of Palestine and dreamed of a Jewish world empire. He hated and sneered at all Christianity and held up the Jewish myth of a Jewish race instead of a mongrel nation dedicated to the synagogue of Satan. He extolled the Talmud while demoting Moses. He called for a one-world government ruled by the Jews from Jerusalem. He looked on black magic and the occultism of Hasidim as an added means of gaining control over the Gentile animals. He was called the herald of nationalism and the trumpet of Zionism, unquote. While the Bible abhors the sin of incest of Lot and his two daughters, as told in Genesis 19:31-38, from which Israel's two worst enemies, the Amorites and the Moabites, came, the sages of the Pharisees say, quote, "A man should always be alert as possible to perform the precept, for as a reward for anticipating the younger by one night, the elder daughter was privileged to appear in the genealogical record of the royal family." And you can find this filth in the Nazar, volume 2, 23b and 24a. In 1945, according to the Jewish press, attempts were made to alter state laws so as to legalize marriages between uncle and niece, which is common in rabbinical circles. This even though the Old Testament prohibits marriages between uncles and aunts with nieces and nephews. You read about that in Leviticus 18:13-14. And yet, in spite of all the filth to be found in this religion, something which can be easily seen if one takes the effort to look, gullible Christians insist on calling these people God's chosen instead of the abomination they really are, and it doesn't make much sense. It almost seems like the Christians are like the lemmings who court disaster as they flock into the sea to drown. In the 1948 Jewish Register, a monumental book of 1,312 pages in three volumes, issued by the Jewish Publication of Society of America, we find a statement to the effect that any idea that Jews, so-called, are citizens of the country where they belong is a delusion. They are the only people in the United States, by the way, who by law are allowed dual citizenship, and when the chips are down, a majority of them are Jews first and Americans second. The Jewish Communal Register concerns itself largely with the Jewish political structure of the New York Kalilah, in which the control of world Jewry is centered. The American Jewish community is the most single powerful Jewish body in the world today and embraces world Jewish capitalists and country-moving political powers. It handles the Jewish affairs in over 65 countries. Jewish World Organization is such that if a Jew is born or is in Borneo or Siam, has his toes stepped on, his government is pressured, bullied, or bought until predatory Jewry is again in a position to climb to world power. There's no better example of this than the United States, where when the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff made an honest observation concerning Jewish interference in the affairs of state, he was forced to apologize or lose his job. Even presidents are afraid of this awesome power. Jewish immigration to the United States in the 20th century has been mainly from Russia and Eastern Europe. Before this time, the Jews who came to America had more or less assimilated into this country and for the most part had become good citizens. But suddenly in the early part of the 20th century, this country was inundated with literally swarms of Eastern Jews, most of whom were not Jews at all, but were proselytes coming from the nomadic Khazar tribe of Western or Eastern Russia. Their ideas of decency, democracy, and freedom were diametrically opposed to everything that America stood for. And these people, according to the Jewish Encyclopedia, were from a heathen tribe which had adopted Talmudism in the 8th century. Other Khazars who had settled in Hungary had adopted Christianity and today are among the most advanced and civilized of the Christian nations. Books could be written about the names in the ruling Kalilah committees which have adversely affected and are even now practically controlling our government. There was Louis Marshall, the man who brought Henry Ford to his knees in the early 20s when that brave American began to expose international Jewry for what it was. Now the entire Ford family bump their heads on the ground and murmur salam whenever a Jewish bigwig comes around. Today, they are more interested in receiving Jewish awards than in the safety and welfare of their country. Marshall's son, James, controls the New York City School Board. Another runs the communist-aided Marshall Foundation, while the third son, Robert, served with the communist-tainted Harold Ickes in the U.S. Department of Agriculture during the communist-Jewish-controlled administration of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. There are the Myers of the Federal Reserve System and the Washington Post. Herbert Lehman, who became governor of New York and then a senator and finally became head of UNRWA, where he was instrumental in funneling billions upon billions of American dollars into aid for the Zionists in Palestine. There were the Warburgs and the Schiffs, the international bankers, who provided Trotsky with the $20 million which made the Bolshevik Revolution a success in 1917. It was Max Warburg of Hamburg, Germany, who was the moving spirit behind the formation of the communist-controlled United Nations. There was Felix Warburg, brother of Max, who married Frieda Schiff, the daughter of the Kuhn Loeb tycoon, Jacob Schiff. Friedrich Warburg was head of a vast string of banks and railroads and was listed in Who's Who of American Jewry. He was a power during the Eisenhower administration. And everywhere you go today, in the field of Christianity, one finds innocents who have been taken in by the propaganda published by the American Council of Judaism and who regularly propagandize the outright lie that Judaism is a religion opposed to Zionism. I was taken in by this plot for many years when I saw Orthodox Jewish rabbis openly bucking Zionism. The full truth about Judaism is that Jewish internationalism is a world run by Jewish humans with the Gentile asses under their control. This is Judaism with its veneer of sweetness removed, and you better wake up and recognize this while there is still time. For under the veneer of humanism lies a fearful visage. I would suggest that the fundamental preachers of America who trumpet that God will bless you if you help the Jews and curse you if you do not would be more honest if they would do a little historical Bible study and they realize that they are aiding their own worst enemies. In fact, they are helping bring about the world government of the Antichrist they profess to abhor so much. In 1905, Russia was free from Talmudic control and was considered a world power. And then the Talmudic Red Revolutions of 1905 and 1907 took place. This turned this Christian nation into a vast concentration camp where those who were allowed to live became the subhuman animals the Talmudists said they were. A Jewish socialist leader by the name of Baruchov trumpeted Zionism as socialist and said that, quote, the theory, which was very popular among the Jewish masses of Russia, was socialist through and through, unquote. According to the Universal Jewish Encyclopedia, at the same time that the Socialist Democratic Zionist Party was organized in Russia, sister groups were being organized in the United States and England and finally in Palestine, unquote. The Histadrut, which is a giant cooperative of unions, properties and industries, bus lines and banks, was organized along the lines of the USSR today and controls 70% of the votes in Israel. If I had the time, I could show you some typical Jewish influence in Turkey and England and Canada, the American Federation of Labor, many, many other areas. It's been the Marxist-Zionist influence, which has insidiously infiltrated American schools with its Talmudic Marxist aims and its philosophy of secular humanism, which is so dear to the Talmudic hearts. And today, an entire generation of young Americans has been tainted by the Tweedledee-dum Tweedledee-dee administrations, which have run America since the days of Franklin Delano Roosevelt and which have all been under strong Zionist influences. The Jewish Congress movement in the United States was steered by the Marxist Rabbi Wise, who publicly crowed in March 1917 that the Jewish revolution, the Russian Revolution, was the greatest feat of the sons and daughters of Zion, quoted in the New York Times March the 24th, 1917. He went on to say in the same article, they united all the nations and radical elements into the National Socialist Workmen's Congress. It would be no problem to spend hours speaking about the Jews who have been documented as having taken part in the anti-God socialist movement nation worldwide, and yet our preachers still insist they are God's chosen people. When all is said and done, as one objectively looks at the political powers in Israel, the Mapai, the Adwith, the Mapon, the Haruth, the Aguda, one must come to the conclusion that the Communist Party International is merely the arm attached to Moscow's branch of Talmudic imperialism, and the only difference between communist tactics and those of the Talmud is that one is political while the other works under the total veneer of religion. The general Zionists differ from the radical only in their stress upon certain policies which are best calculated in the minds of the Talmudic leaders to achieve the world control that they desire. Let's take some time here for a moment to look at one of the many Jewish leaders who has been labeled by some as conservative. And I have in mind Rabbi S.S. Wise, the founder of the American Jewish Congress, who was listed in 1939 by the World Kollelah as being one of the most important figures in international Jewry. He followed the communist line with enthusiasm. A book could be written concerning the red activities of this Zionist leader, both during and since the revolution in Russia. Wise was not only the founder of the American Jewish Congress, he was also a committee man of the communist-aided American Civil Liberties Union, a member of the Communist Legion Against War and Fascism, before it changed its name to the American Legion for Peace and Democracy. He actively backed the communist anarchists Sacco and Vanzetti, the communist dynasty of Tom Mooney, the National Religious and Labor Foundation, and was instrumental in the vast distribution of the communist William Z. Foster's book Towards the Soviet America. Backing the Talmudists' insane hatred of anything Christian, he praised the communists when they burned churches and murdered Christians during the Spanish Civil War. He backed the members of the American Legion for Peace and Democracy, whose official program was the inciting of mutiny and sabotage within the armed forces of the United States so as to turn any war of the United States into a communist revolution. To his dying day, Rabbi Wise was vocal in his support of the Soviet slave state, which murdered millions of Christians that he so fiercely hated. Wise hailed the First World War as the chance to begin Jewry's world base in Russia. He constantly gloated over the Red Revolution financed by the international Jewish bankers. The New York Times of April the 24th, 1917, reported the gigantic headlines, a celebration held in Carnegie Hall with the headlines, Rabbi Wise Ready for War. This article went on to tell how Jacob Schiff had financed revolutionary propaganda which destroyed the Tsar's army. At this celebration, Wise said, quote, I cannot forget that I am a member and a teacher of a race of which half has lived in the dominion of the Tsar, and as a Jew, that of all our achievements, none has been nobler than the sons and daughters of Israel have taken in the great movement which will free Russia. When Wise died in 1936, he was mourned by the entire Jewish world, and the American Jewish Yearbook of 1950 called this communist agitator, quote, the moving spirit of the World Jewish Congress from its organization. Until his death, more than any other American, he was the outstanding symbol and advocate of Zionism, not only in the eyes of the American Jews, but of the entire American people, including Presidents Woodrow Wilson and Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And the yearbook continues, towards the end of his life, Rabbi Wise was greatly disturbed by the foreign policy of the United States, which he felt was heading towards a war with the Soviet Union, unquote. His last weeks were spent in a vicious attack against those elements in our government which were opposed to communism. When Wise was questioned about his communist affiliation, his mouth would twitch with anger, and he would vent his satanic spleen against anyone that sought to oppose him. This was the man that our religious leaders held up as a conservative Jew. During a libel suit against the Chicago Jewish Sentinel, brought by authoress Elizabeth Dilling, which was settled out of court by a cash payment, Wise declared that the Talmud testimony of the Manzer, that means bastard Dilling, was the Jewish setback of the decade. She had proved in a court of law to the judge's satisfaction that while a sewer is a useful and a normal channel for cleaning up waste, the Talmud is a satanic, abnormal, diabolical channel for funneling sub-sewage into the minds of those who are required to study it. The whole Talmudic religion would have to be revamped in order to bring it up to the level of a sewer. Its doctrines are illegal in all the civilized countries of the world. It advocates murder of non-Jews, mass enslavement of mankind, and the reversal of all laws based on biblical morality. Can you imagine what would happen in the United States if the identity preachers would begin to preach that sort of thing against the Jews. The most powerful capitalistic Jew functions came through the all-powerful arbitrators of world Jewry, the American Jewish Committee. Louis Marshall, its president in 1917-1918, was the one, as I mentioned earlier, who had forced Henry Ford into an apology for exposing world Zionism for the satanic force it is. When Ford's car was forced off the road in the deliberate assassination attempt, his wife pled with him to cease his exposures. One of the articles in Ford's Dearborn Independent showed how President Taft was brought to his knees and refused a second term, and then was decorated by the B'nai B'rith and given a professorship at Yale. He went on to a lucrative lecture tour addressing Jewish audiences from coast to coast and wrote international propagandas for the Zionists until he died. The Marshall family has worked all sides of the street for the Talmudists, the capitalists, the educational, the Red Revolutionary, the legal, and the United Nations. Son James headed the New York City School Board for a number of years and a string of Jewish communal organizations. He was a member of the law firm Marshall, Bratton and Sigelson, and was a member of the legal counsel of the Jewish-run Communist Garland Fund, which was subsidized the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. James was a delegate to and a commission member of UNESCO. He was a member of the American Bar Association and was vice president of the American Association for an International Office of Education. Whenever you see the words regimentation, democracy, and freedom being thrown around, look for the Talmudic hand somewhere in the woodpile. They throw out these goodies to keep the kiddies occupied while the stockade is being built to confine them. Brother Roberts, while not as prestigious as James, was head of the New Deal Forestry Department of the Department of Agriculture. When he died, he left a fat fortune to be used for Marxist purposes. The Robert Marshall Foundation, exempt, of course, from taxes, benefits every phase of communist activity. This was thoroughly documented by the Dyes Reports of 1944, Volume 17, Sections 1 to 6. A third son of Louis Marshall's, George, has a communist record so clear and voluminous that it left no doubt about his ideological devotion to the Soviet Union and the Revolution. He had 29 communist affiliations, according to the Dyes Report. We could go into great detail at the time allowed about men such as Cyrus Sulzberg, the father of Arthur Hayes Sulzberg, the New York Times tycoon, and the head of UNRWA, which has always been notorious for its aid to every phase of Jewish world power. There was Adolf Lewison, the mining and New York Stock Exchange financier, who infiltrated the YMCA with disastrous results. There was Leon Moshlip, who came here from Russia in 1891 and returned to the USSR in 1929 to become the Commissar of Education. There was Jacob Wertheim, investment banker and director of the Revolutionary Socialist Nation magazine and of that Center for Marxist Propaganda and Talmudic Freudian Filth, the New York School for Social Resources. There was Oscar Strauss, who merited two full pages in the Universal Jewish Encyclopedia of 1943. This foreign-born Jew manipulated the administrations of five United States presidents, Cleveland, Harrison, McKinley, Theodore Roosevelt, and Taft. He was noted for communist activities in Turkey and the Philippines. He negotiated with Theodore Herzl, the father of modern Zionism, and through his efforts became Secretary of Labor under Theodore Roosevelt, controlling American immigration at that time. This was when the floodgates were first opened for the arrival of hordes of communist Jews from Russia and Eastern Europe. He became the American representative for the communist-leaning Federal Council of Churches of Christ in America, in Palestine. Now it's called the National Council. Strauss presided over the International Court of Arbitration at The Hague, just as his American Jewish communist members provided over its successor, the United Nations. And on we could go, with documented proof that the princes of Jewry are even now remodeling the world a second time in our generation for one world takeover, a Jewish dream of the ages, a world control. The Bibles tell us that the Jewish beast system will fail, thank God, but God alone knows how much suffering and misery it's going to bring because of Christian apathy towards this problem. There is no doubt that many conservative Christian preachers will accuse me of red baiting and witch hunting when this message becomes public. There is little doubt in my mind that many men whom I considered my friends will turn against me without ever bothering to check out the charges I am outlining. Even my own pastor has done with the remark that he did not have time or willingness to read the kind of junk you are presenting to me. How did he know what is junk when he even refused to look at it? His criteria was that it was critical to the Jews, therefore it had to be bad. This is the nature of the fatal disease that we face in America today. Many good Christian preachers say that while the use of the occult by the Jews may have been possible, it is not part of their religious teachings today. So I want to take you directly to the official source of this information, the Universal Jewish Encyclopedia, and give you a glimpse into the foul occult practices going on within the Talmudic synagogue today. In Rabbi Joshua Trachtenberg's book, Jewish Magic and Superstition, he seeks to erase the ritual murder charges which have been brought against the Talmud for centuries in many different countries. Here's what he says on page 9. The constant reoccurrence of child sacrifice in these trials and the importance of human blood in the witch's ritual, the most distinguishing elements in the techniques of the sorcerer and the witch, are disclosed as a popular view. A few pages later, he makes this statement. The sources indicate that Jews were at least acquainted with methods of inducing disease and death, of arousing killing passion, and of forcing people to do their bidding, of employing demons for divinatory and other purposes. We find all accounts of the magician's power to project his soul to distant places, there to perform an errand, and return it to his comatose body, unquote. In the practice, Jewish Kabbalah, we find mention of blood, blood, and more blood. Right in the Shulchan Aruch, the distilled laws of the Talmud, we find ritual hand-washing stemming from the Talmud in connection with Pharisee demonology. The whole of the Bible is full of this bloody business of pagan demonology. Baal worship with its cutting knives, see 1 Kings 18 and 28. Moloch worship with its child sacrifices. Both are condoned by the modern Babylonian Talmud. Every form of paganism spoken against in the Old Testament can be found today in the whited sepulchres of so-called Judaism. Christian ministers would do well to read what the Bible shouts out against this and find out that it is being practiced today in the synagogue of Satan by those that claim to be God's chosen people. The Bible acknowledges evil spirits and says we must not use them, yet they are approved in the religious books of modern Jewry. The cry of persecution or anti-Semitism is always used by the only people on earth whose religious teachings says that murder and enslavement of other people is their sacred right. A few years ago, the literacy test for American citizenship was fought in the courts by Jewish lawyers so that hordes of illiterate Jews might be allowed to enter this country. This they did in the early 1900s. Three literacy bills which were brought before Congress and passed, two were vetoed by Wilson and one by Taft. Time proved that both of these men were tools of the international Zionists. You have only to read books such as The History of the Jews of Russia and Poland, put out by the American Jewish Committee for its own people, to see how every law on the books was flouted by Jewish Talmudists as they rose to assassinate and crowd their way into complete mastery and butchery in Russia. Is this what American Christians want for this country? We see this same sordid game being played today in Israel, as they are the only civilized country in the world that I know of who had as their national leader a known murderer and bank robber, and of course I'm referring to Mr. Begin, who has publicly boasted of murdering over 300 people with his own hand. And yet our president welcomed this murder into the White House, giving him a brotherly hug, and Begin hates his guts and would like to do him in. One of the articles of the Dearborn Independent that got Henry Ford Sr. into trouble with the Talmudists was the one headlined, Taft Once Tried to Resist the Jews. It appeared on January the 15th, 1921, and here's what Mr. Ford said. Mr. Taft once stood out against the Jews and was strongly denounced as unfavorable to the Jews. He was so strongly beaten by the Jews in a matter on which he had taken a strong stand, and has ever since shown that he has learned his lesson by accommodating the Jews and their desires. For centuries, Russia has had her own trouble with the Jews, and as all the world knows, has at last fallen prostrate before the Jewish powers, which for centuries has been working to undermine her. The biggest hoax of modern time was the propaganda against Russia as the persecutor of the Jews. Russia devoted to the Jews a large part of the most favored section of the land and was always lax in those laws which prohibited the Jews from settling in other parts of the country. The cry of persecution rose because the Jews were not permitted to exploit the peasants as much as they desired. They have since gained that privilege, unquote. And this is the same cry which has been raised 60 years later. And yet I challenge any of you to look at the preponderance of Jewish names among the commissariats of every known communist nation, with the possible exception of China, and tell me that the Jews are not the conspiracy. Official U.S. reports show that at the time of the Russian Revolution, the Jews were exaggerating their difficulties for the purpose of forcing governmental action. The executive committee membership of the American Jewish Congress, Jacob Schiff, Louis Marshall, Adolf Krauss, and Judge Henry Fogel walked into the White House on February the 15th, 1911, and demanded a conference with President Taft. They were dined at a White House luncheon. But when Taft refused to break our trade agreements with Russia, Schiff stood up and screamed at him, "This means war." He refused to shake the president's hand and brushed past him with offended dignity. And from that time on, it was war, as the Zionists deliberately set out to humiliate Taft and the American government for their own selfish ends. And the neutrality of the United States was torn to shreds by a movement which was organized and financed on Russian soil for the overthrow of a friendly Christian nation, Russia. The organizers was Jews, and the game was communist revolution. And as the Jewish leaders left the White House, orders flew to every part of the United States, and the Jewish drive began. It had its center in every city. It focused on every senator and representative. No official, no matter how lowly, was missed in this drive. The editor of every American newspaper was affected, just as they are by Jews today. And within 10 months to the day, when Schiff stomped out of the White House, both houses of Congress ordered the president to notify Russia that our trade treaty had been terminated. And the same format has been used over and over and over again in our government on every political front, in politics, education, and religion, until most officials roll over with their paws in the air like some puppy dog, rather than risk the ire of the Jews. And the same thing can be said of many fundamental Christian schools today, for their leaders know the truth about the Jews. They know they belong to the synagogue of Satan by their very actions, and yet they have been intimidated into keeping quiet about it. The power of the Talmudists can be seen when we realize that the largest single Jewish contributor to the Communist Commonwealth College, the Zionist Louis Brandeis, was placed on the Supreme Court of the President of the United States, and we could go on and on, such as this. How many national known preachers, such as Billy Graham, Oral Roberts, or Jerry Falwell, do you know who have ever attempted to expose these enemies of Jesus Christ? Just the other day, I received a letter from Jerry Falwell, which said, "God has impressed on me that our nation is in imminent danger of losing her freedom. It is because of moral situation now gripping the United States that God has given me a plan of action to save America. First, I desperately need a sacrificial gift of $50 from you to help launch this plan of action. The plan of action which I believe God has given me calls for an army of 1 million righteously indignant people who will stand in the gap for America. I am calling this a campaign of Wake Up America. It is my conviction that saints are the salt of the earth. Salt is a preservative. Will you be a grain of salt and help preserve our land?" Unquote. And then he goes on with more concerning America's plight. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not against Dr. Falwell's plan. I believe it's great, and I pray that it'll be successful. But if I were a betting man, I would be willing to bet my life that neither Dr. Falwell and all of his associates will ever hint at the fact that the corruption he abhors and rightly fights is coming from Jewish sources. Instead, he is one of the fundamental preachers who met with Begin and say, "We fundamental Christians are behind you no matter what you do." Wake up and look at the facts, Christian. The Babylonian Talmud, used in every Jewish synagogue, is against every Christian principle and is blasphemous of our Lord Jesus Christ. All rabbinical sources, conservative, orthodox, or liberal, call our Lord a bastard. Please excuse the terminology, but there's no other word that I can use. And over and over and over again, they have said, "We will do everything that we can to destroy what you believe in as Christians." It saddens me to see great men of God as they scramble for the privilege of shaking hands with a murderer like Begin. whenever he shouts up in the U.S., shows up in the U.S. asking for more favors. And let an officer of the law treat Jews as he does others with no fear or favor for the chosen race of lawbreakers, and they will see to it that his term of office is ended. It's happened many times. You hard-headed Christians, I dare you to put this to a test. Talk about the Jews in public as you do in private and see what happens to you. I dare you. I know what you say about the Jews in private. I've heard you. But all my Christian brethren, how Christian you really are, how chicken you really are when it comes to your Christianity. You know that you are a coward when you fail to protest the Jewish control of press, the magazines, the book trade, the TV, the movies. You know you're a coward when you fail to expose Jewish influence in legalized abortion, in the ERA, in homosexuality, in pornography, in prostitution, in the removal of prayer and Bible reading. But you say we cannot indict a whole race. When one nation declares war on another, it indicts every member of the enemy nation with the enemy characteristics. Remember World War II and the concentration camps on the West Coast? Christian, you are in a war of survival, whether you want to accept it or not. You realize this or not, and we must view with suspicion all of those of Aryan character who may be a danger to our Christian way of life. 50 years ago, the PAP now being preached in a lot of American pulpits would have been called treason, and yet today many of our fundamental and orthodox preachers scramble to get onto the Zionist bandwagon and smile with pride when they receive some Jewish award for their efforts. Oh, fools and slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. And we could go on and on and on, because, my friend, our time is just about up here, and I want to come to a conclusion by saying this. Christ was not a pacifist. He said in Matthew 10 and 34, "Think not that I am come to send peace to the earth. I am not come to send peace, but a sword." And in Luke 22 and 37, he told his disciples, "But now he that hath no sword, let him sell his garments and buy one." The Jew is and always has been an internationalist. We have all history to confirm this. His only law is his business, and he will do anything possible to bring about that which he desires. An explosion is coming to America sooner or later. It's on the horizon. And woe unto this country, and especially those of us who call ourselves Christians, if we are not prepared to meet it and take a stand against this evil which seeks to destroy us. We can, you know, for Christ himself, our great leader, has told us, "In the world ye shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer." In other words, don't be afraid. "I have overcome the world," John 16 and 33. And in Hebrews 12 and 4 we read, "Ye have not yet resisted unto blood, striving against sin." Christian, you haven't reached a place in your Christian life where you're willing to put your life on the line against the satanic evil in this world. My Christian friend, you don't contend for the faith when you aid the enemies of God. Sit down and sort out your thinking. Then go to God's word for your guidance. Don't be led astray by those who would have you aid his enemies. We can win, and we will win this war if enough Christians fall in love enough with their Lord that they will listen to him and do what he asks. Will you be one of those? Soon the war is going to be ending, and Jesus Christ, the one hated by the Talmudists, is going to reign on this earth of King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Why don't you make your peace with him right now and be in on the winning side? Thank you, and God bless you.